Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the ICON Research Center at the University of Warwick. This is supplement to episode 30, where we're going to discuss our final JMS classic by Hugh Wilmot. To get the text and for more information, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. My name is Dimitris, speaking to you from Athens in Greece, actually. So it's been a while since we've done a supplement to an episode, and because of that I'm going to remind you what these are and why we're doing one today. So supplements were the original additional segment to a full episode that we did, I think during episodes 1 through 5 or so. The idea was to inform listeners about what the text is going to be about that we're discussing. So this was supposed to be a segment where we give a bit of context and introduce the reading a little bit, so that when you do get to listening to the full episode, if you haven't read or are not familiar with the work that we're discussing, then you would be having listened to the supplement. We replaced these in favor of summaries around episode 6 or 7, and have been running with the summaries ever since, simply because we felt that a summary of a discussion might be more valuable than a pre-discussion supplement of the reading. So why we're doing one today is partly because of ongoing scheduling delays with recording episode 30. So we actually haven't yet recorded it, but we hope to finish that very soon. And partly because this is a big topic that we're going to address in this episode in a very direct way, namely the critical management studies literature proper. So we have interacted with this literature before, especially in a discussion with Mats Alveson, but there we sort of focused more on aspects of knowledge rather than critical management studies or CMS. Mats himself is one of the acknowledged founders of the CMS as a movement, and Hugh is another one, and in fact it's their book Critical Management Studies that is widely believed to have kicked off the field in an organized way. But we haven't yet really interacted with this school of thought before, so I think a supplement might be in order to help those unfamiliar get their head around what is this critical management studies and why it's interesting and why we're going to be talking about it in this episode, as well as in season 4 in upcoming episodes there. So to get straight to it, critical management studies is essentially an approach to management that is informed by a combination of critical theory and post-structuralist theory. So critical theory is referring to a body of thought that originated from the Frankfurt School, that this might be a more familiar way of describing that, which essentially sees ideology as the main inhibitor to human progress and human liberation. So if you think about what we discussed in some other episodes, such as Marxist theory, or variations of Marxist theory, essentially there the idea is that it's the social forces and the material conditions that prevent people from achieving their authentic selves. In Marxism specifically, it's to do with modes of production and separation of the producer from the product. In other approaches, such as existential phenomenology, for example, by Martin Heidegger, this is more seen as a fault of technology, that technology is separating individuals from themselves and who they could be. Here, in critical theory, it's more to do with ideology. So it's specifically discursive ideology. It's how individuals talk or are prevented from talking, and what people could do about that. And in this respect, episode 28, where we had Mats Alveson, the paper that I mentioned just before, on organizations as rhetoric, is an amazing example of this approach applied to management. So again, we didn't really talk about it in the episode because we focused more on issues of knowledge. But essentially, if you think of organization as a collection of stories, myths, and ways of talking about itself and its constituent factors, then you basically get this, the ways of how individuals talk about, and specifically individuals in power, talk about themselves and others and those dependent on them, very much impacts the form, purpose, and actions performed within an organization. This is also similar to when we had Sarah Kaplan on and we were talking about cognitive communities. So that work doesn't address critical management theory directly, but you can certainly think of it in these terms as well, that thinking and talking about something that even is seemingly as objective as market conditions out there and competition is still very much a function of through dialogue. So that's basically a butchered version of critical management theory, but it's sufficient for what we're doing today. And today what we're doing is introducing what the reading is about. And the reading is about what's called corporate culturalism. So corporate culturalism is a very popular approach still, and starting from 1980s up until, well, ongoing, really, that sees organizational culture as one of the primary ways of improving organizational efficiency and optimizing organizational resource use and so on and so forth. So it became popular with the total quality management and balanced scorecard movements, which saw culture as a set of values, and the idea there was that if these values could be systematized and shaped in such a way as to enable individuals to be more productive, be more quality oriented, then that would be fantastic for the organization. There's a lot there that that draws direct inspiration from scientific management, except that where in scientific management the focus was on the body of the individual, and thinking back to Taylor, you can recall aspects such as time motion studies, where it was studied in a very systematic way how the body can be used in the most optimal fashion to achieve and perform a task. So here, body is not paid as much attention to, but we're now talking about values and ways of thinking. And the corporate culturalism movement is very much at the forefront of that. It's how to shape a culture within an organization in such a way that individuals now having subscribed to this culture would be able to fix anything wrong with the organization that might not be down to culture and attitudes and so on and so forth. There are a number of problems with this movement. We're not going to go into that now. I think as we go along with the podcast, we'll be uncovering them one by one. But we're going to talk specifically about Wilmot's Journal of Management Studies classic and what he thought was problematic with corporate culturalism. So he said that corporate culturalism preys upon the vulnerability of modern individuals who are burdened with the responsibility of choosing between a puzzling diversity of options and possibilities, but lack access to the resources needed to respond to this predicament. So Hughes' paper is called Strength is Ignorance, Slavery is Freedom, Managing Culture in Modern Organizations, and that was published in 1993. In the paper, Hugh did something different from to what would normally be done, and instead of grounding his theoretical and analytical discussion in existing management theory, he drew on metaphors from literature, and specifically on George Orwell's classic dystopian novel 1984. Page 523, Wilmot accuses corporate culturalism with systematizing and legitimizing of a control that purposely seeks to shape and regulate the practical consciousness of employees. A couple of sentences later, he continues by saying that corporate culturalism became a medium of nascent totalitarianism. But rather than old-fashioned oppressive totalitarianism, Wilmot brings in Orwell's concepts such as doublethink, where paradox is a tool or a weapon of maintaining certain ways of thinking. Specifically, he was talking about how corporation grants the appearance of autonomy at the same time as enforcing uniformity. So think about corporate slogans such as you can be yourself, but in practice this is actualized as you can be yourself and do what you want to do as long as you do what we want you to do. So as confusing as that sounds, the premise there is that organizations are looking to capitalize on diversity, but only insofar as it is serving corporate goals, which is not really a genuine or honest way of thinking about diversity in any way, and much less so in terms of cultures. And while we're on the subject, culture management itself is a very tricky concept in that sense, because to manage a culture is by definition something very oppressive to do. Culture is generally thought as an emergent, ongoing process of social interactions and collective memories, sets of artifacts and symbols, but management is of course a way of systematizing and binding and bounding things to very narrow definitions, and thus culture management is by definition a very butchered way of approaching a collective organization. But that aside, Hugh doesn't really go that much more into Orwell's work, which is a bit of a shame because it's a fantastic metaphor. Luckily, the commentaries that accompany the paper, so one by Peter Fleming, who is going to be guest on episode 30, and the other one by Hugh himself, they build on Orwell in a much more direct and frequent way. So even the titles of both papers are the one by Peter Fleming, Done with Big Brother, The End of Corporate Culturalism, and Hugh Wilmot's response, The Substitution of One Piece of Nonsense for Another, Reflections on Resistance, Gaming, and Subjugation. Both papers devote a lot of space to member resistance, which Wilmot's original work was criticized for not adequately addressing. In fact, Peter Fleming's paper, the one that is accompanied here, Done with Big Brother, focuses explicitly on the evidence of employee resistance found within the data and the quotes that Hugh Wilmot provided in the original paper. So that is roughly the landscape that we're going to be dealing with. We have an approach to management that is disguised as embracing diversity and egalitarianism and almost equality in the face of processes, but in reality it's a potentially highly oppressive mechanism of removing any sort of individuality from people working for the company. As long as something doesn't follow through with corporate goals, it should be weeded out and removed, and that is because corporate culturalism does not tolerate heterogeneity. It's a very homogeneous approach. Culture is uniform and monolith, and as long as everyone subscribes to it, then the organization is one big happy family, which is a very common metaphor for these approaches. But once there's deviation, then that's seen as problematic rather than natural, and is aimed at being removed or reduced at the very least, which is why the metaphor and analog to 1984 is absolutely wonderful. There, the protagonist was observed by a totalitarian state as he was deviating from the norm, and then he was brutally brainwashed back into compliance. So, on this positive note, we'll leave you with this first ever supplement in a long while. I would like to suggest and recommend before next week, when we release episode 30, you can have a look, obviously, at the papers, but if you'd prefer to listen to something, the Partially Examined Live podcast has a recent episode on George Orwell's 1984, which might give a good, or at least a decent introduction to what are some of the issues of paradox and authoritarianism that do come to play in these writings on management. All right, thank you for listening, and hope to see you next week as we finish up season 3. Wow, guys, thank you so much for staying with us and enjoying these episodes. Now, before we finish, I almost forgot, there's only a few days left for you to submit a review for the podcast on iTunes and get a chance to win a signed copy of Stupidity Paradox by Mats Allison. They arrived a couple of days ago and it's absolutely wonderful. We're going to be posting some pictures on social media so you can have a sneak peek at what's on offer, but basically just the only thing you need to do, leave a review on iTunes, you'll automatically be entered into the draw. And then we're going to pick one random listener from the reviews and send you the book. You get a free book that's signed by not only a two-time guest on the podcast in the first ever podcast prize draw, but also one of the founders of Critical Management Studies. How incredibly amazing is that? Anyway, don't forget, it just takes a few minutes. I know iTunes made it a bit more difficult now than it has to be, but still, reviews help new listeners find the podcast, which is why we're doing this. We want to get our conversations out to more people who might not otherwise be able to find it or might not be super confident in trying new things. But other than that, please join us next week as we finish up season 3 here on Talking About Organizations.